Hello, Kay. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Gary?
Excellent. Good. I'm excellent. It's good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. Do you want to play Hucka Bugga Beanstalk?
I do, if only I knew how.
You are likely to be eaten. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torch of a match in your inventory.
So I got to see you recently.
Did you?
Yeah, like on my computer.
Oh, yeah, we played a game. Yeah. That was fun.
We played a non-Infocom game. There what? Are other games in the world, no. Apparently.
No, really?
Yes. Apparently, yes. One of our pals arranged an online gaming thing with Zoom and various technologies, so we could get together with, I think there were 10 of us total, and it was super fun.
Yes, we played Jackbox.
That's what they're called, yeah. Jackbox.
Yeah, it's a series of mini games meant to be played online at party sort of games with friends, and we had a great time.
I agree.
Yeah. Yep. I had to draw a person who was pregnant with raccoons.
Oh, you got the pregnant with raccoons? Yeah. I got the celibate tiger. I had to draw a celibate tiger.
You drew a striped cat and the words "no junk."
Okay, well, that's, I should have done unused junk, but you know, you're under time pressure. So, you know, people get what they get.
Sure. They do.
Yep. And they also get what they get in space. With Planetfall. And what they get is robots and comedy and many words misspelled.
Yes. Yes, they do. I am excited to talk with you about this game because you managed to make it 35 or 40 years without being spoiled about this game, and we are going to be super careful not to spoil anything until we get to the spoiler fence, but I'm really excited to hear like your thoughts on certain things that happen in this game.
The weird thing is I think I'm like one of the few people interested in Infocom who knew as little about this game as I did. I don't think it ever played, but at the end of the episode last time, you had asked me a question about like what I knew about this, and I gave a short answer, and I was mostly wrong. there was so much here that I did not know, and I have emotions and I have opinions, and I do look forward to sharing them.
Excellent. Well, this is really Planetfall was really a seminal Infocom game. I mean, one of the first for sure. I mean, not you know a pretty early one, and it was Steve Moretzky's first game, but also just it had you know a character that really stuck in the history books of computer gaming, I think, you know, mm-hmm. and some new ideas that they were playing with and some ideas that they played with that were bad ones, frankly. But
I had the name of the character. I knew there was somebody in this named Floyd, mm-hmm. But I was wrong about what Floyd was. I thought Floyd was just like a generic NPC or something. I knew there was a Floyd, and I was pretty sure that the player, it wasn't the avatar for the player. Like, we weren't playing Floyd. There was a Floyd in the game. And I was right about that. Right. But I was very much wrong about the rest of Floyd.
Good.
It was good that I was wrong.
I'm excited that you got to be surprised. And I mean, because this was all, even before I played this game the first time a few years ago, it had been spoiled for me. You know, like I knew about Floyd and I knew everything. And you know, it was just one of those, you read computer magazines and books and stuff and you learn stuff. And so anyway, you managed to, mm-hmm. to do the awesome, the hardest part of this game was probably not learning about the game.
Knowing as little as I know is the most difficult task.
You want to read some mail before
I do want to read some mail.
Excellent.
Sure, I could do that. I even copied some mail into my notes.
Oh, you're smart.
I'm feeling mail shame because I never do that. We get the mail part. I'm like, I don't know. There was some good mail. So what have we got here? Evan Wright wrote us Saying, hi, guys. Hope you are staying safe and healthy. Don't know if you mentioned this on the show, but I'm pretty sure the Dorn Beast in Beyond Zork is a reference to Mike Dornbrook, Infocom's VP of Marketing. I don't think we mentioned this because I don't think I knew that.
Hmm.
I should have been able to figure that out, but
yeah,
I did
makes
not.
Sense.
There's also it totally little, does make sense. So
they hide little things in there. Mm-hmm. I like that. Our friend, Mr. Anderson, wrote in again.
Torbjorn. Yes.
He said, I listened to your episode on Beyond Zork. I can see where some of your criticism comes from. And it's not one of my favorite games today, but I still remember enjoying it quite a bit then. I enjoyed the sense of progress as I explored new areas, finding new items to either identify or sell. The setting was quite a bit of fun, and the user interface made the game look very cool and unique. But the game does feel a bit out of place. It's built as a Zork game, but seems to connect much more strongly to the Enchanter series. The introduction text directly references Spellbreaker, not quite fitting into either. There are also some references to his first Infocom game, Wishbringer. I don't think I had played that at the time. But don't let that put you off. Wishbringer is a charming little game that is almost, but not quite, entirely not a Zork game. I hadn't heard of the rug bug before, which I mentioned after the spoiler fence, so I'm going to be careful here. Sounds like even more fun than the bug I found in Suspect recently. You can use the syntax burn object in fireplace. The game won't check on if you're carrying the object. So if you can put quite a few things, including people and abstract concepts, in the fire. Burn Veronica in fireplace. Veronica goes into the fire. Burn murder in the fireplace. The murder goes in the fire. Burn house in fireplace. The house goes in the fire. Look in fireplace. In the fireplace, endangered by the fire, you can see a house, a murder, and Veronica.
That's hilarious.
That is good. Bugs are fun.
Bugs are fun. I never get to spot them, though.
Let's see. And then he does some spoilers. I'm going to skip past that. He said... you said lots of other good things, but they're kind of spoilery or whatever. So I'm going to move on. Thank you for your letter, Mr. Anderson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We got another friend of the show, Giovanni in Florence, wrote it again. He wrote in with a link about Planetfall, but then you warned me off reading it until after I finished the game. Mm-hmm. And I only just finished the game a couple days ago, so I've not had time to read the link. But I will eventually.
Okay. Yes, the link is a... is called Floyd Here Now, A Study of Planetfall's Most Enduring Character.
Right. And I did not really know yet about Floyd.
Yeah, it's a 2004 paper written by Kirk Shimano, and for a class, I think. It's just a class paper that Mr. Shimano did, and
cool.
It's worth looking at.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So you were asking online about the status line and Planetfall.
Yes.
Did you find out
I
about
did.
That?
I did. This was real interesting. So, I mean, I always, when we play a game, before I even start the game, I get all the links that are going to be in the show notes. You know, Digital Antiquarian always writes about the game, so I put the link in there. I don't read it until after the game is played. You know, and if a couple of blogs review the game and put a link to the box and browsies and stuff like that. And I just get all that set up and the stats on how many rooms there are and objects and vocabulary. And one of the things I do always is I find the initial mention of it, of that game, in the Infocom newsletter. The Infocom newsletter famously started off being called the New Zork Times, which is hilarious. And then after a while, the New York Times threatened to sue, so they changed the name. There was one issue that actually had no title. It was just four asterisks. And then they changed the name to The Status Line, which is a good name. But it's no New Zork Times. And so I always try to find the issue that announces the new game so that... if someone wants to see, kind of how it was initially put out there. And I could not find the issue that mentioned the first mention of Planetfall. The summer 1983 issue, which was volume 2, number infinity, because these people are ridiculous, of issue of the New York Times said like in a banner. Third sci-fi game, Planetfall, due out in July. Fine, cool, kind of a pre-announcement. The next issue that I could find online was Winter 1984, so approximately a full 6 months later, was Volume 3, Number 1. And it casually says, Sorcerer, the second in the Enchanter series of adventures in the Mystic Arts, is now available. The game was written by Steve Moretzky, whose hilarious science fiction game, Planetfall, was named by InfoWorld as Best Adventure Game of 1983. So it kind of low-key, that was like the first mention of Planetfall was this low-key casual announcement that, oh, it won this big prize. But it was part of an article about Sorcerer. So I put a thing out on Twitter, and I was just like, look, people who know more about this than I do, what's going on? Either the internet is missing an entire issue of... Which seems really unlikely. Or they didn't announce the release of the game in the newsletter, which also seems real unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out the reason was that this was right in the transition of the newsletter being in summer 1983, that was the last newsletter, which was published by the Zork Users Group, which was like a fan group of Infocom people. And then it was taken under the wing of Infocom. It took a full 6 months. The Winter 1984 was that first next issue. So in that time, Planetfall came out, and then it was probably too late to do a big announce about it for that point. So it never really got announced in the New York Times.
Fell between the cracks,
which is strange because this was one, like I said, one of the biggies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably
Absolutely.
Their best sci-fi game.
And from the beginning of our show, people, like I think from the very first episode, were saying, yeah, oh, I can't wait till you get to Planetfall.
Yeah. Yep. Now we've done it.
And now we've done it, that we hate it.
Yeah, people, this one and Hitchhikers were the two that people were really, yeah, really hassling us about. Get off our backs.
Yeah, man.
It's done. So, yep, that's why it was not in the New York Times. Yeah, let's see. What else can I tell you? Like I said, it was Steve Moretzky's first game, and maybe we should talk about the box and stuff. We should talk about what this game is.
Yep, but before we do that, yes, I found a New York Times thing too.
Mm.
Well, a status line anyway.
Tell me.
Because you were talking about the New York Times, mm-hmm, and they're so funny. So I went and grabbed some and was reading them. And I just happened to be browsing through, and I found something that I don't understand. But I was browsing through the winter 1987 issue of the status line. I just stuck a link in our show notes because there's something really strange in it. On page 13, it has a list of all the games and what systems they're available on, and then the order codes if you want to buy them. So if you want the Apple II version of Witchbringer, it's IZO-AP1. And if you want the Commodore Amiga version of The Witness, it's IM2-CO4. And it says how much they are. And not everything is available for every system. Right. Like if you've got a Deck Rainbow, you can get most things. But if you've got an Epson QX10, you can get The Witness and maybe nothing else. Oh, and Zork 1. That's what you can get. And Hitchhiker. Like, everything came in Hitchhiker. So I was looking at those, and I thought, well, isn't this interesting how it kind of gives you an overview of the various games? There's tons of them by this time, because this is 1987.
Yeah.
And all the various platforms that they supported. But as you get, like, into the newer games, we get into things like Trinity and Suspect and stuff, they're on fewer systems. And especially when we get to the later games like Beyond Zork and stuff, because they're bigger, mm-hmm, there's simply no way to make those be on the TRS-80 Model 1, for instance.
Right, they required 128K or whatever.
Yeah, that's just, yeah, way, those computers couldn't count that high.
Yeah.
And so, like, haha, suck at other computers. But one of the weird things is, on page 13, it's got the whole list of systems and...
there's a second page. I just found... Oh, it really
exactly
goes on.
But if you look at page 13...
Uh-huh.
Okay, you're looking at the page? Okay,
yeah,
so
yeah,
I'll walk you through something strange.
Okay.
And listener, if you're listening at home, you can go to our show notes. You can pull this up too, and you can be surprised at the same time, because this is really strange. So on page 13, it's got the list of systems down the left side,
mm-hmm,
and across the top are the various games.
Yep.
And you can see the very bottom row, though, is the InvisiClues.
Yes.
And so, just like the games, InvisiClues exist for most of these things.
Uh-huh.
Not for Fublitsky, obviously, because that... But if you go onto the next page and you look at Cornerstone...
I think I see what you're going to say.
Uh-huh. It exists for IBM series and 100% compatibles.
Yep.
and it also has Invisiclues. Why are there Invisiclues for Cornerstone? And like, doesn't that seem strange to you? Like, that's an orderable item. BC1-BOK, 1495. Invisiclues for Cornerstone.
Oh, yeah.
No, I want the Invisiclues for Cornerstone.
Yes. You're right.
And I think it's really strange because I looked at the column and there's only two items and one of them is Invisiclues. So what's up? Now, I bet you a listener will know. And maybe that's just what they call the manual. You could get another copy or they had a hint book or something. And if you're Infocom, what else are you going to call the hint book? I don't know. It's just weird. But there seems to have been Invisiclues for their database program, Cornerstone. And I want a copy.
I have been looking for Cornerstone since we started this project. To set up a search on eBay. In the time, the 3+ years since we started this, it's come up twice. And it's sold for way too much both times. The manuals, as the last I looked, aren't online. You know me, I like to scan things, put them on the Internet Archive, and I figured I'd scan the manuals and get them online. They're not online that I can tell. And then the two times I've seen it go on sale, it goes for just lots and lots of money. So the program itself is difficult to find. I imagine the Invisiclues are going to be pretty impossible to find.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's a super common thing, or was it just a joke as you're saying? Yeah. Like, who knows? I don't know what I'm talking about. I just was kind of struck by the columns. I'm like, well, that's an odd thing to exist.
That is funny.
Yep.
Good find. Cool. Yeah, these newsletters are great. I mean, they're real weird. I mean, there's little puzzles and things about bugs and cartoons that I don't know. They're fun. I wish companies did stuff like this more now.
I agree.
Yeah, I also agree.
So shall we talk about Planetfall and its box and such?
Yes, you have the box, don't you?
I do. I've got the folio. I've got the big fold-out thing.
You're good. One of the best art covers of all the games.
It's terrific. The whole thing is great. The really early packaging for Infocom is what these things call the folio. And so a lot of times there are those special shape ones, like there's the mask one and the flying saucer for StarCross.
Mask is perfect for sitting.
So this is like kind of like an old-fashioned record album almost, except it's not quite square. But it's very large, thin. It's sort of like a big version of the old Electronic Arts around this time would have those big gatefold ones that would open up and have the black and white pictures of the programmers on the inside. But this on the outside just has a big red border, and then there's an illustration of a spaceman with his helmet on, looking all cool, except he's holding a mop. And so it's got that comedy element to it.
Right. It's like he's really
striking.
He's running at you. It's like he's running into battle. He's got the helmet on. He looks like he's fierce and he's ready to kill aliens, but he's got a mop.
He's got a mop and a bucket, and it says Stellar Patrol, Special Assignment Force, but even your expert technical training won't save you now, Planetfall.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really striking cover. It's excellent.
On the back it says, join the patrol and see the galaxy. You see that you took the poster's advice, bait and all, and marched right over to the recruitment station near your home on the backwater planet of Gallium. Images of exotic worlds, strange and colorful aliens, and deep space heroism had danced in your head as you signed the dotted line. And since that day, the closest you've come to deep space heroism was scrubbing down the radioactive leper colony on Ishmael 3. But suppose that jumbo fortune cookie you got at Quang's to take out asteroid last shore leave was right. Maybe you will indeed narrowly escape disaster. It's even possible that you'll actually travel to an unknown corner of the universe where you'll save a doomed planet or die in the attempt. In fact, we'll guarantee it, every crumb of it, because that's just the way the cosmic cookie crumbles.
Aww.
Yeah. Tell us about what's in the box, Carrington.
In the box is the floppy disk and then one of those Interlogic reference card fold-out thingies. Mine's orange. That's the thing that tells you how to... That's the thing that is specific to the computer. So mine's the Apple II version. It tells me how to play on Apple II. It has a big basically a big magazine, though it's in on cardstock, and it's only 4 pages, but it's relatively large. It's almost 11 by 17, then folded down. And it's Today's Stellar Patrol, boldly going where angels fear to tread. But it's essentially the instructions. So it's nice and nicely laid out and has great illustrations. First big fold-out says the patrol's looking for a few good organisms, and it's about how to enter commands and such. Then it's got learn valuable skills and see the galaxy. And that's again more about the game, how to know where what your score is, how to find you are, like, because again, this is a really early game, so they're dealing with probably a bunch of people who buy this game never having played a text adventure of any sort. So there's a lot of time spent in these magazines kind of just explaining the basic idea that you're going to type in words and say what to do. Last one is take command of your tomorrow today. Again, it's commands and it's like what to do and how to type again and diagnose and quit. And then it's got that usual script kind of walkthrough thing that says like here's some ideas of how to play the game. And then the back page is be part of a legacy that lives on. And again, it's about Infocom, and then write in if you want to get to more info about Infocom and stuff like that. But it's good.
I'm looking at that. There's a survey here that I had not noticed before. I did not see this before. It's like a questionnaire. It says, find out if you're stellar patrol material today. It's an incredibly comprehensive questionnaire prepared totally in accordance with the rules and regulation of the 8th Division Codes of the 3rd Galactic Union. And basically, it's just like questions like, you know, how would you... Do you smoke often, sometimes, never looked, you know? and then do you need glasses or corrective surgery on your eyes? And the yes box is huge and the no box is tiny. It's hilarious. I find it very funny.
It's good stuff. Yeah. I like their feelings. Yeah.
Okay, keep going.
What else do we got here? We've got 3 postcards, like actual stick a stamp on the mail postcards. Mine are unstamped and unmailed. There is welcome on over to Nebulon, home of the worm people. And then on the back it says, Nebulon, the quaint and colorful inhabitants of this grand old planet are sure to worm their way into the hearts of visiting tourists. And then it's the area where you can enter your info and an address and send it off to. Then I've got greetings from Accardi 3. And the back of that says, the fabulous Accardi 3 belt. Name your pleasure from, oh my gosh, something slime racist to the robot taxi. I'm here sitting basically in the dark to the robot taxi joyrides. An exotic automati charms of the galactic hyphenated woman. Oh my goodness. So they say it's the galaxy's playground. And then we've got hello from historic Ramos 2. On the back, it's Ramos 2, where yesteryear lives on. The Circuit of the Double Suns has something for every nostalgic soul. Genuine rocket ship rides, ancient plutonium age battlefields, even old-fashioned mutant hunting. So, oh my goodness. So 3 postcards. And then there's a credit card, like a laminated
ID card thing.
ID card, but basically feels like a credit card. And that is my Stellar Patrol Special Assignment Task Force ID. It's unsigned on the back, but I guess I could sign it if I want to make it worth even less. Not that I really care about collective value. My number, though I think everybody gets the exact same number, this one is 172-531-541.
That's my number too. Twinsies.
Oh, we're both the same. Yeah. We're buddies. Stellar Patrol buddies. And then there is the last thing is 4 handwritten pages just on Stellar Patrol stationery, which is York. This is the thing, the feely that leads you into the game. So this is essentially notes. It's like the diary of your avatar. So you read this right before beginning the game, and it's about person, you know, joining the Stellar Patrol, getting really disenfranchised with the work, most of which is like scrubbing and scrubbing toilets and stuff, and getting very upset at Blather. Blather is the person just outranking our avatar who is assigning us to do all the terrible things, and Blather features in the game. And so this is about, you know, what they're doing and hanging out and watching movies and how terrible this is and how might just have to like jump ship at the next place. So, and then there's one blank extra page. So you get one page of stationery that you could write on. But I did not.
Nice.
I did not. I resisted.
But okay. So that's awesome. And these are fun feelies and browsies.
They are fun feelies.
Not really feelies, but browsies for sure.
Browsies. Right. No, I think Felice. I think it's like postcards.
No, postcards.
Felice.
Okay, all right. Yeah, Felice. All right.
And, am I right? I think the Browsy is the attached thing, and the Felice are just all the stuff.
Okay. Yes.
Versus just if you read it, it's a Browsy. I think people were right.
You can read a postcard. More. I don't know.
Where? Apparently not.
Where's the line?
Only two out of three.
In a Browsy. So you don't actually, this is one of the rarer ones where you don't have to actually read any of this in order to play the game.
I really think there was nothing in any of them that you would actually need to know to finish this game. I think there's nothing.
Yeah. And you had an extra Browsy.
I did. The original owner, presumably the original owner, had a printout here. As I'm waving it, this sound of me waving at the microphone. It is fanfold paper from olden computer days with the tractor stuff on the left and right. And it's from a dot matrix printer, kind of faded and looked like it needed to be re-inked at the time. And it's somebody had printed out some notes and printed out a walkthrough. It turns out I didn't look at it too carefully until after finishing, so I could tell it was notes or something about it. And it's the walkthrough, copyright 1983 by John L. Moss, which I think this is from Electronic Gamer magazine, it looks like. And so somebody found that, and I guess either typed it out or downloaded it or whatever, and printed it at the time as a hint thing, and then tucked it in the box, and that's the box that I have. And it's like my favorite thing that came with it is that little record of the original owner. Makes me very pleased.
That's cool.
Yeah, I shall scan it and make it available online.
Yes, you should.
Fine. I shall.
You're good. Cool. So yeah, this game had those things in it, and let's see where to start. it started off. The title of it was originally the working Moretzky's. Moretzky's working title. Did I mention this is his first game?
A remarkable first game.
Yes, out of the gate.
Come on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he'd come do other great stuff too, but yikes. The name, working title was Soul Survivor. And then it was
Planet Fall's a better title.
Yeah. And then it was changed.
Sometimes I don't like the title. I like the working title better than the original one. I think that's happened. But this time, I think Planet Fall's better. Yeah.
And then Survivor, and then it ultimately became Planetfall. Yeah, so that's that. It was released in August 1983 in the fall.
on a planet.
On the planet Earth. Yeah. So, all right, so you start the game, and you are on the ship, and... you are scrubbing the deck, and Blather, the ensign above you, is screaming at you about this and that. But before too long, before like really very long at all, the ship starts to explode, and you hop into a escape pod and escape onto a planet. Right?
That is correct.
And that is how that game begins, and then you're exploring the planet and learning the story.
So one thing I should mention about that I think I counted it to be 26. It's something like of the first 25 or 26 moves, all except two are weight. Now, they don't have to be weight. You could just walk around or whatever.
Right.
So not really much of a spoiler, but the reality is there is a very extended beginning to this game where you're kind of just waiting around for a thing to happen, and there's really nothing you can do about it. You're just kind of waiting for it.
Right.
And I think that's not good. I'm sure it was fun, and you want to set it up. You want to set up the world and introduce Blather and all that, but the reality is you're at 26 moves where you just like wait time passes, and then suddenly there's an explosion and you're off. You basically enter an escape pod, and that's not a spoiler because that's like literally your first move you're gonna do.
Right.
The game should begin with you in the escape pod, like you're a spiraling escape pod. Oh my goodness, the ship has exploded, and you're looking through the escape pod window at your ship on flames. Just begin there. They should just cut the first 30 moves. This is my opinion.
Okay, all right, I can see that. I like that. I mean, I don't know. You get to see, if you don't just wait, you can wander a little bit on the ship. There's a couple of rooms you can get to before getting yelled at by Blather, and there's an alien you could meet, and you can, it kind of sets up some of the flavor. But it is.
And if you, and there's a, the magazine, you can get a little magazine, and that's the thing that there's always a thing in these games where you get it, and if you read about it, it tells you what the game is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like that. That's it's the magazine that you get. Mm-hmm. It tells you that it's
don't think I saw that.
Fault, but yeah.
Yeah, but the game starts off slow.
Now I'm wondering if I'm misremembering that.
I don't know.
Maybe I'm digging in. Sure, it's the magazine. Why not?
So yeah, it starts off kind of weird. I mean, a lot of action's happening, but to you, not because you're doing it, and then the game really starts. You have complained many, many times, and I have agreed with you. I mean,
complain again.
Yeah,
get ready.
That many of these games are not interactive fiction. They are a series of at the beginning, you're told what you need to get. Then you do a whole series of puzzles, and at the end, they mention again, "Oh, you got the thing."
We now resume the plot already in Prozac.
Exactly.
Or Prozac.
Partially because of the beginning that you're kind of dismissing. This is a story that evolves from the beginning of the game through the end of the game, with the story developing all the way through, and you're learning about the planet while you're there, and you're learning about the culture and the residents, and I don't want to give too much away, but it is a story that develops all the way through the game, and this is a piece of actual fiction that you can interact with.
Strong agree. Yep. And it's not simply, like you say, it's blown up, you're on a planet, got to get rescued, just go find a whole bunch of things and stick them in a trophy case, and then suddenly you get rescued.
Right.
You actually do learn things in dribs and drabs throughout the game that have direct relevance to your situation and how you're going to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
And I dug that very, very much. I completely agree. This is an example of actual interactive fiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good.
You can still skip that first chapter, though.
Okay. All right. Maybe.
Or there should be more to do there. I don't want it to be like, I it's just like, wait, and then G, 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 G,
right.
Go west.
Oh, I didn't ask. How did you play this? In what did you use? What tool did you use to play it? An actual Apple again? Or
No, weirdly, although I have I never play it. I only ever play in emulation mode. Mm. Like, I never play on an actual. Okay. I don't even have an actual Apple II anymore. Mm. I've gone all emulator. But I do like to play in often using Pitch Dark, using a Virtual 2,
mm-hmm.
which is totally my favorite way to go. And for some reason, I didn't this time. Mm. I was playing on an older MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And I played on Zoom on that. And I don't even know why. I just picked it up and just started playing on that. And
that's interesting.
Just what I played on.
This is the first game that I played in Pitch Dark in an emulator.
You have become me.
We inadvertently switched places.
That is so bizarre.
It's Freaky Friday.
What?
Well,
that's cool. I thought you couldn't get it working. I thought you were, because you had.
Well, let's see. What had happened last time? No, I couldn't get Zoom working anymore.
No, that's what I meant. I thought you couldn't get. Oh, right.
Right. I couldn't get Zoom
that
working.
That wouldn't stop you from doing that.
Right. So I decided.
I can follow along.
Right. So I decided. I could have used SDL Frauds, which I talked about last time.
Right.
But I was like, you know what? I've never used our friend's program, Pitch Dark. I mean, I've looked at it, but I've never really used Pitch Dark, which was created by our friend 4AM. And so I decided to use it, and I really enjoyed it. In the process, the very beginning, I found a bug in the Virtual 2 emulator. not the game, in the Virtual 2 emulator. I reached out to 4AM. I was just like, why is the game not working right? And I was just like, oh, it only happens if I look at the box art and before I play the game. And then they could recreate he and Cucumbo could recreate the problem in a particular version of Virtual 2, but not on the real game. Anyway, it was a bug in the Virtual 2 emulator. So
you're very good at finding bugs.
I don't like to be. I don't like that skill. It was frustrating.
I played a ton of these games in using Virtual 2 and Pitch Dark and encountered no problems at all.
So I liked Pitch Dark a lot. It was a really great.
Isn't it great?
It
feels really authentic. It feels like you're playing like an old game in an authentic sort of way. Like I really, really like it.
Yeah, agreed. The thing I didn't like, and this was not a a deficit of Pitch Dark. I mean, Pitch Dark is running the original Infocom games the way they're meant to be run. Is the Infocom games, I forgot, gave you 7 save slots. Mm-hmm. 7 or 8. I think, whatever. It's very few. And when I've been playing on Zoom for pretty much every game, I mean, sometimes I have 20 or 30 saves, and I give them really good names, like, you know, about to do the thing, or like succeeded at doing the thing, score is 80, you know, whatever. And I really long descriptive names, so I remember exactly where they are, where I was, and I can go back to different points. In here, it was save slot 3.
Yep.
And so that was different. And I mean, really adds to the realism of how people had to play this game, you know, back in the 80s. But
and that's what I do. I basically just cycle through them. I'll save, and then the last one was 7, then I'm back to 1, and I just like, how many saves do I need?
But this was not the first time I had played Planetfall.
That's right. Yeah, because you knew all about Floyd. You knew all about this before.
Right. So, yeah, I looked in my diary. I had played this game in December 2012, and on December 30th, 2012, I finished playing, but I didn't actually get to the best ending. You know, there's a couple of different endings you can have. I did not get to the optimal, like, really you win ending. And right. then I stopped. And I don't really know why. Maybe I didn't really maybe I just didn't realize that I should go back and try to
do better.
Yeah, right. Try to do better, or I was just like, oh, I finished the game, yay, or, you know, I don't know, or maybe I just got busy, it was the new year, who knows. But end of 2012, I finished the game, and I had played it on my iPhone or an iPad or something, using the Lost Treasures of Infocom app, which is no longer available. So anyway, that's how I had played it before. So when we played it this time, it was not everything. There were several things, some key things that I remembered that helped me get through the game faster than I certainly did the first time, because I remembered how to get past certain issues.
Right.
And there are also certain things I completely had forgotten and were tricky.
It was all new for me.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that was totally new for me is I got to experience, and if people have played this game before, I think it'd be easy to forget, like, that it's an unveiling of this world you're on. So your character has been, you know, blown out of the side of a spaceship, and you've done Planetfall. You've landed on a planet in your little escape pod, and you climb up out of the sea, and you enter these buildings. And one of the first things you come across is a plaque, and the language is, it says the language seems to be a corrupt form of Galalingua, which is like a galactic, like Esperanto for the galaxy, I guess. And you can read it kind of phonetically, but it's clearly all spelled wrong. Like, it says Scenic Vista, S-E-E-N-I-K, Vista, and then X-I-S space S-T-U-N-E-E-N-G space V-U-U. And these are corrupt English, because it's this stunning view of Z Calamonte Valley, and Valley is spelled V-A-L-E-E, and it curves over, and it's spelled K-U-V-U-R-Z space O-O-V-U-R. So it's this weird corruption. And so I, taking these notes, like, did English evolve into this, or did it devolve into illiteracy? Like, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And then I was keeping track of, like, these weird misspellings and stuff, and it makes, like, the setting for this game is so good. It is so incredibly, incredibly good. I just adore it. Mm-hmm. Because it's in this future where there was great technology, and then a massive fall from technology, and then a build back up. And there's, like, this part of this, the area you're in, that's really still quite corrupted, and then part that's nicer and newer. And it's great because you've landed on a planet that is completely abandoned. And people who follow other podcasts I'm on will probably know that I have waxed rhapsodically about my absolute favorite Apple II game, which isn't really a game, called Portal, not the modern Portal game, but one by Activision, that is basically this same plot. In Portal, which is really just a book, you basically just read it. All, it's like a text adventure without any of the interactive parts. It's just like, you read this. It's almost nothing that's interactive. And in that game, you're a space dude who's sent off on a massive mission that, and you're in cryogenic sleep, but then you're woken up early and your spaceship has come, been recalled back to Earth, and you don't know why. A ton of time has passed, but you're way earlier than you're supposed to. And nobody's answering on Earth, and you land on Earth and everyone's gone. It's like a completely empty planet. But then you find out that everyone went underground centuries ago. So how interesting. So you go underground, everyone's gone from there too. It's like, okay, what's going on? So it's the same sort of thing where you're on an empty planet that has gone through a few different strata, and you're trying to piece together what happened and where did everybody go. And I just adore it. It checks all of the boxes for the kind of post-apocalyptic future-y type thing I love. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's what Planetfall has. Same thing. You've landed on this planet and everyone's gone, but where have they gone? And that's part of the mystery you're going to unfold here. And this weird language and empty corridors, and it just totally adds to that. And I found it completely engrossing. I just adore the setting for this and how it gets unveiled to you. And unlike Portal, which again, still my favorite game, this is quite interactive. Like, there's this whole library, and it's not got a ton of books, but I just really loved sitting down and reading through the library and basically trying to translate these stupid things.
Yeah, it's all written in that weird language, and you read it basically, I mean, you have to slow down for that part of the game when you're reading everything in the library, because it takes your brain a while to transliterate.
Phonetically and go, okay, this would be this, and this would say this. And then you learn about how they've moved their planet. It's great. What a great setting. Perfect for the story. Really well fleshed out. Mm-hmm. Just so good. Such a good setting.
Yes. I think, I don't want to, well, I'm just going to say it now. I think this is, in many ways, almost the perfect Infocom game. It is, not too hard. It's interesting. There's stories. The puzzles are accessible. There is an interesting NPC to deal with. It is really, it ticks my boxes, the kind of thing I'm looking for in an Infocom game. And many of them don't. I mean, many of them, aren't for me or whatever. I think this is almost the perfect Infocom game. However, it also has some of the worst aspects of Infocom games.
Right, yes, it does.
It really does. It doesn't have a maze. I will give it that. It has no maze and no riddles. However, it has these problems of dealing with inventory, and the inventory, just like, oh, you pick up
the
a thing.
The inventory is remarkably annoying in this game.
It's really bad. You pick up a thing, it's like, oh, you're carrying too much, and you drop that thing and another thing, and then you've got to pick the things up, and it's just the usual thing I complained about the last game, where you need to carry around more stuff than you can, and there's no, mm-hmm. this one doesn't even have a backpack or anything that you can use. So you've got to deal with that, and then there's this stupid thing that luckily they got rid of, I think, that where if you almost pick up too much, then you start fumble fingering and dropping more than one object. So not only that, what's the other thing that's terrible? You have to eat.
Oh, eating is so stupid.
You have to eat and sleep. Sleeping's not so bad, and it kind of gives some time to the game, and you only
I forgive the sleeping because you go through multiple days. There, we'll talk about after the spoiler fence, but there's a bit of a ticking clock to this, and so the fact that you have to sleep and you have these interesting dreams, which kind of reminded me of later games we played, like the spell games that have dreams. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, and so the sleeping I can forgive. You kind of get tired. You got to make your way to a place that's safe to sleep, which is really obvious when you look at the map, and then you sleep, and that brings you to the next game, which also like iterates on this ticking clock. So it adds urgency, it adds a little bit of difficulty. So I thought that was an okay element. I don't like having to sleep or rest in these stupid games, but at least that's okay.
Yeah.
The food, that's just dumb. Luckily, there's a way to it doesn't become a massive problem. Like, there's not a major food shortage once you figure out kind of how to solve food.
Right, I like the puzzle of getting the food the first time. You know, that was an interesting puzzle.
You should just have the food. Mm-hmm. And,
it was a good puzzle with a locked door puzzle and whatever, and you had to figure out how to get there. And I forgive it for the puzzle, but once you eat once, you should just be satiated for the rest of the game, perhaps.
Well, especially because you do essentially find, I don't want to do a spoiler, but kind of infinite food. So it's just silly to make you have to deal with it after that.
However, I want to mention that there is a version of the game, which we have talked about before, which is Steve McRae's modernized version of Planetfall, which you can download from GitHub, which is basically he put a new command, a modern command. You can do classic or modern modes, and it has bug fixes and some spelling corrections and things, but it removes
spelling corrections. Yeah, that'd be a major change.
It removes the need to eat, and it also says it removes some of the more egregious deaths and some walking deads. You know, where you've spoiled the game, but you don't know it. But I mean, basically, the big win on this is it removes the need to eat, which I think would make the game 50% better. So if someone wants to play this game, I'm just going to say this now before I forget. If you want to play this game, and you should, unless you're married to doing it like old school, fine, do it. But if you just want to play the game and enjoy yourself a little bit more and enjoy Planetfall without just hating Moretzky's need to make you eat, play the modernized version. It'll be just a little bit better.
Yeah, the need to eat adds nothing to the game. Like you, and it's particularly annoying in such a good game. It's a very bad mechanic, but of course it's a really early game, so they're still trying to figure out the language of these games.
Sure. Which is difficult to read because it has lots of
such crazy language. It was great.
This is the first game I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying, like, I have to phonetically, playing this game where you have to phonetically pronounce things was just such a weird and yet kind of fun element to the setting. Like, it never annoyed me. You think it would. I was reading, like, all these little books in the library and having to phonetically pronounce everything, but it was just part of the setting. Like, it actually just added to it. Weirdly, never became annoying. Eating, immediately annoying. Having to phonetically pronounce everything I read, not at all.
This is one of the first games that we played in quite a while, just because, you know, we're doing whatever order we want. But this is one of the first games that we played in a while that has score.
It does indeed. My score was 80.
Yes, my score was also 80.
We died.
I was reading through the Infocom gallery. What's it called? Archive.org. Infocom cabinet. Sorry, at archive.org.
Oh, Infocom cabinet. Right. Yes. We talked about that.
I was looking, just kind of glancing through it, and it's fascinating to read after you've finished the game. And I saw in it that originally the game was supposed to have 400 points, and they found a bug. It said scoring revised on April 25th, 1983. It's almost the 25th right now. Scoring revised on April 25th, 1983, due to a bug in the Atari interpreter, which would not allow a three-digit score and a four-digit time.
Oh.
So they revised the score, so the maximum was 80 instead of 400. So there's kind of a chart of, like, here's what it used to be and now it is. So, yeah.
That's interesting. Oh, yeah, we should speak about that. You have a watch in this, a chronometer, yes. And there is a time, but the time is a four-digit number. It's like an odd sort of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't find it was useful for anything, really.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. It would simply say, like, number, it was kind of like what your move was, but the move was just like, here's the current time. It's 5,380.
Right.
It's like, oh, okay. It did seem to affect the world. There was this one part of it that is not active from one period to another period, it seems. I don't know what the end period was, but I was able to figure out when something stops being active because it was getting in my way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which I'm not sure that was really useful.
Nope.
To have that part not work.
As useful as eating.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. This game has, let's talk about the stats of the game. Mm-hmm. The average Infocom game has 81 rooms. This one, have you looked at the numbers yet?
I have not.
You have not. Okay, you haven't looked. So let's play. Let's play higher or lower. Is this one more or less than average?
I'm gonna say it's less than average.
You are wrong, sir. This game had 105 rooms compared to the average of 81. So, kind of a lot. The average Infocom game has a vocabulary of 976 words. What's the over under on that, Carrington?
I'm also going to say under.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. 699
with less
words.
Force, apparently.
699 words compared to 976 average. And I was feeling it in this game. I
was not. Really? Hmm. I was going to say they did such a good job. I don't think I banged into a missing verb once.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Steve and I were like on a wavelength.
Yeah, I guess, maybe. lean ladder against thing. I don't know, lean. Climb ladder. And it said, bizarre.
Why would you want to like, climb the ladder? The ladder? Oh, yeah, I shouldn't spoil
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but what? Ask Floyd about machine. I don't know the word about. So, yeah, I kept... it wasn't terrible, but it felt a little bit... And yet, there were times where the game kind of... And I think this is kind of its under, kind of because of its underlying game... leaned, broke the fourth wall a little bit and told you how to play it, like, directly in a way that they did not do later.
Yep.
My first death,
it told me what I did wrong.
Did it?
Yep. Really? I often try to die really early in games. I don't know if we've talked about that before, but I'll normally, in my very first playthrough, I've got two traditions. One is, if I can name my save, like I'm using Zoom or whatever, in any text adventure, really in any game ever, I will number my saves, usually with a three-digit number, which is very pessimistic. So I will number them 001. Uh-huh. And like you, I will often give it some words. Like it'll be like 019, about to press the red button or whatever. Because like right before I do a thing that I think is a bad idea, right. I'll make a save. And so for graphic, like this kind of everything I do, but my personal tradition is I'll save right at the beginning of something after the preamble or whatever. Like, so if I think I'm going to have to start 100 times, just past the stuff I'm going to want to skip. And I'll always call that 001 just begun. And it's just because it kind of rhymes and I like it. So I have like a million old save files called 001 just begun for various games. Who knows what? So you can't even search for it. It's crazy. So that's one tradition I have. And then the other tradition is, with an Infocom game, how quickly can I die? Like, just like, because it's the first game, I'll just run through and just like, let's see what happens. Let's see how quickly you can get yourself in it. And I won't take the first playthrough seriously. I just like to limber up. Let's just Leroy Jenks it. Let's just see what happens. And in this game, I did the same thing. I just wait. And there's a way to die very quickly not in the explosion, but just in the escape pod. And I could tell what I should do, but I'm like, I obstinately refused to, and it killed me. But then when I died, the message, which I don't want to read, maybe I have the spoiler notes, I'll read it. It said, maybe you should have, and then said the thing that was pretty obvious I should do. But I was surprised that it told me, like, you died, and maybe try this next time. Mm-hmm. And I could see how, if their focus is on really new players, somebody easily could die and not realize, and they would feel really disheartened. So giving them kind of an answer to avoid the first possible death and letting somebody get past it would be a real ego boost, I think, or confidence boost anyway. So I can see why they did it, but I thought it was pretty funny that you can die pretty quick. Mm-hmm. You can die in those first, 30 moves.
Right.
And it will tell you what to do to avoid that.
If you wait wrong or something.
Yes, exactly.
I did something, I typed something stupid like look robot instead of look at robot or I don't know, something like that. And it was just like literally said, This is better than those two word text adventures that you're used to playing. You can type things like examine robot. And it was just like admonishing me like how to Infocom. It's kind of funny. Okay.
Oh, I have a whole big note section here on bad parser.
Yeah.
I guess I completely flushed that from my mind. Turns out during the game it was frequently annoying me.
For instance?
Pour flask into hole. Pouring or spilling non-liquids is specifically forbidden by section 17.9.2 of the Galactic Adventure Game Compendium of Rules, which makes it sound like you can't do that. But you can. You have to type pour fluid into hole, like pour the contents. But it's human English to say pour the flask. We all know what that means.
Right.
Like, there's another one where I said open bottle, opened. Take medicine. Everybody knows what take medicines means when you're holding a medicine bottle. It says fat chance. And so one might think that therefore you can't consume this stuff. Yeah, no, you have to say drink medicine. I'm like, come on. So a bunch of little things like that. And also when I typed look self once, and it also admonished me for not using a preposition. I was like, but clearly you understood what I meant.
Right.
So.
The pterodactyl is not a bird.
Up. Let's try.
Okay, average Infocom game has 36 objects.
This has 7,000. It has so many more. Actually, no, I would think, 30. Thinking through, mentally cataloging the various things I picked up, I'm going to say under by a few.
No, there's more.
Oh, 40, man.
45.
Oh, darn it. I am bad at this game, having just played this game.
Okay, here's the last question. The average Infocom game has 30 ways to die.
Okay, there's at least one.
Yeah.
I died way fewer than 30 ways. 30 yes. ways?
Yeah.
There's no way. I'm going to say under. We've got to be way under.
This game has 42 ways to die. Can you believe it?
What? Wow. I died. Mostly I just restarted because I knew I was in a going to lose position. I died maybe four times, like actual deaths.
Which is one of the reasons I like this game. It's like, okay, maybe there's technically 42 ways to die, but it's not a punishing game.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Although you can definitely get yourself in an unwinnable situation, which I did near the end, but it was obvious right away that I was in an unwinnable position. I used a thing to defeat a thing, and then I got myself back facing that thing again. I went, oh, I no longer have the thing that defeats you. Well, I'm dead. And so I just restarted. So it wasn't one of those walking dead situations, which are the worst.
Right. Right.
Where you've lost, but you don't get to know it for 500 moves.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's the game. You did poorly.
Bummer. That's a bummer. Okay, so one of the things I like about this game is funny. It's mm-hmm. got a bunch of little humor things. I love the setting. Like, I just love the setting. But there's that typical, I mean, lots of stuff with Floyd. We'll get to Floyd. Oh my goodness, I can't wait to talk about Floyd. But even just like in kind of jokes and stuff, there's one point where I say, look under, I went into a room and look under the table. So I say, look under tables. Wow, under the table are three keys, a sack of food, a reactor elevator access pass, 100 gold pieces. Just kidding. Actually, there's nothing there. So that kind of stuff. And when you go to save, now we can go to Floyd. Mm-hmm. So if you type save, Floyd, if he's with you, it says Floyd's eyes light up. Oh boy, are we going to try something dangerous now? That is so good. Oh, Floyd. Yep. So funny. I just love that you save and he's like, oh, great. We're going to try something really good. Because anyway, those little fourth wall break things that Floyd does and mm-hmm. does at the very end as well. I dug it. So I liked those little bits of humor. I really liked. So the combination of some fun humor lines, great NPC in Floyd, like this amazing setting and like a really neat plot. Like just like you say, it ticks the boxes. It's got so much going for it. There, did you read The Towel?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if we can talk about that before this book. Yeah, well, it's a small thing, but you can read The Towel. And it's from the spaceship you're on, but it says it's escape pod number 42, don't panic. Like, nice little nod there.
Right. Yeah, and this was years before he worked on Hitchhiker's Game.
In fact, I looked it up to see. I was going to say, is this after? Nope. Before, just was a fan.
No, he was just a fan. Yep.
Yeah. As are we all.
Mm-hmm.
Other Infocom games are mentioned in this game.
Yes.
In the library. There's Interlogic Games, spelled Interlagamz. Interlogic Games. And there's Zork, Z-O-O-R-K. There's Deadline and Witness, but Deadline is D-E-D-L-I-I-N. And Starcross and Suspended, and it talks about those games. But one of the fun things was, like, so I was reading through the library, and the way you read through the library is, it's like, you know, the 1980s thinking about the future where everything's like, press one to read this and press zero to go back up one. And I was like, oh my goodness, like we're gonna have a digit-based menu on this computer, but okay. Mm-hmm. And so I read about Zork and Deadline Witness, and they're kind of like little ads sort of for the games. But instead of typing like one and hitting return to read number one, which was Zork, I just typed Zork because, you know, you think that would work. So I typed the word Zork and the game responds with Gesundheit, which I thought was very funny. I was like, that is well done.
Nice.
Yep. Oh, and also when I was reading about Zork, Floyd makes a comment about it, saying that I didn't write down the exact, but he says something like he loves that game. He solved every problem in it, except he couldn't figure out how to get into the White House.
Nice.
Yeah, totally.
I missed that. I don't think he was with me when I was in the library.
So. It was a bug and I found it.
Nice. Cool. Nice. Well done. Floyd, I'm not going to say anything that's anywhere near spoilery, but Floyd is a great character. He mm-hmm. is fun and, you know, is one of the great NPCs. And frankly, I think, I mean, later they would be other better ones, but this is one that really, was the first to catch the attention, I think.
There aren't a lot of other ones that are much better, though.
Hmm. Okay.
And some elements of Floyd and the way you work with Floyd, like you can have Floyd go do things for you. Hey, Floyd, mm-hmm. go fetch me this thing. Right. Reminded me of NPCs. There's like in Trinity, mm-hmm. there's like an NPC where you can say, hey, NPC, go do this thing. Go do this stuff for me. Go get me that thing.
Right.
So they kind of reuse the Floyd mechanic in later
games. Except Floyd is a lot less useful most of the time because the kid, it's basically a four-year-old. I mean, he's just like he wants to play all the time.
And grab his crayon and write on the walls.
Yeah. Yes. And he's singing songs and he's saying stuff and sometimes saying the same stuff over and over again until it gets annoying, just like a four-year-old.
Yep. But it works so well in the setting because you're mm-hmm. in this future desolate place where everyone's gone.
Yeah.
There's, like I said, a dangerous ticking clock going on. And mm-hmm. so there's this oppressive, empty, maybe post-apocalyptic future. And then this babbling little fun four-year-old beside you going, Floyd's here, let's write on the wall and let's do things.
Exactly.
And so that bit of comic relief fits so well with this setting. It's great.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, in some of these games, I have said before, like, it feels lonely. It feels like you're the only one who's ever been in this place. And this really broke up what could have been a monotonous game, you know,
or at least that very desolate sort of feeling.
Yeah.
It does not have that desolation, which without Floyd, it absolutely would have.
Right.
Then again, I like a desolate setting. Like, so I think I would have liked it anyway.
He said from his apartment with no furniture.
In my minimalist apartment, my empty white room. Like, I love a desolate future type thing.
Bring on the death of the universe, I say. Right now, dude.
Exactly. Or a desolate present, apparently. But Floyd is the reason this game doesn't have that. And that is a big... That really says a lot about his character, its character, I guess, because it's a robot. We have mentioned Floyd's a robot, right?
Sure.
I don't know if we actually said that.
Floyd is a robot.
For those listening at home who haven't played, Floyd's not actually a four-year-old, you find. It's a little robot.
Well, that would be sad.
It would be, right? It's like, eating stinks. I refuse to do it. Too bad for you, Floyd. So Floyd is a little robot, and I think it does say a lot about Floyd's character that you can have this... You know, extra turns out larger than average map that is all just desolation and emptiness and puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't at all feel desolate because of Floyd, who is basically at your side all the time. Like it's hard to have Floyd not around.
Right. Right.
Floyd just follows you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if I have a whole lot more I can say that spoilery.
Yeah, most of the stuff I have to say would be pretty spoilery. I'm looking through my... There's no maze in this, which I liked.
Thank you. Hooray
for the lack of maze.
Mm-hmm.
There is one tiny bit of twisty passages where you go west from a place, but then you wouldn't go east to go back
just,
to that place.
Yeah, just that one room, which was... Weird.
I don't know why that happened, but I was like, what? So, mm-hmm. exactly. So, you know the room we're talking about. There's one room that has weirdly two entrances in it where you leave different ways to go. I don't know why that one was done. But other than that, there's no mazes. I like riddles, but there aren't any. That's okay. I like mysteries, but there aren't any. That's okay. So, the stuff that you really don't like about these games isn't there. So, I like the setting and the map, it's a super fair map. Like, you can, mm-hmm. other than that one room, you totally know where you are. And it's a map that has disparate parts like that you get in things that take you to other parts of the map. And yet I was able to map it all and not get lost. In fact, for a lot of it, I like a lot of the bigger maps, you start to just know your way around mm-hmm. where I would know I'm here. I want to go there, go up three, go left
right.
four. And,
yeah. There's kind of some discrete sections. It's not a giant sprawling thing because it's kind of like area A, area B, area C.
Yes. Yeah,
so while we're talking about mapping, let's talk about the maps that our friends on Twitter posted.
Why is everybody else's map so amazing?
Floyd. Two different people on Twitter sent us maps that they were making or had made of Planetfall. And these things
that are incredible.
Beautiful. Like architectural drawings. Just these beautiful, maps hand-drawn on graph paper or whatever.
Mine are embarrassing scribbles.
Yes. I posted mine just as comparison, which, I mean... They're terrible. I mean, it's just like scrawls and just little lines going everywhere. And I don't see how it would be possible to make a good map while you're playing a game because you learn things like
this.
Yeah, I guess.
These are people in the middle of playing who have incredible maps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was very impressed. Yeah. Very impressed by both maps we saw. I was like, what the heck? Yeah, I mean, they're better than maps. They should be posting their maps online. They should be making maps and making a repository online because they're better than maps that you can go and download. Like, they're very, very good maps.
And one person said that he was translating all of the ancient language English into actual English because it bothered him. So he was talking about modifying the game. So it was...
But I liked it in the old map. But I also, the way I would read it was I was phonetically translating it. So I was kind of translating as I go.
Right.
But I liked the fact that it was like that.
Right. And you're just sitting there like saying out loud, and this beautiful vista.
Vista east, this underscore around corner. Okay, got it. Yeah, it's awesome. Okay, I'm scrolling down. I got notes about the end. I got notes about Floyd. I got notes about the setting. Now, all of this is spoiler stuff. I got a lot of spoiler notes, which is a testament to a game with a bunch of plot. A lot of games, we can talk about a whole bunch of it as long as you're not talking about the answers to particular puzzles.
Yeah.
And you're not going to spoil anything because, like, what plot is going on? This has, like, plot spoilers. Like, there's things that happen in the middle of the game that you learn about the setting.
Spoilers plus plot spoilers.
Yeah, but plot spoilers. And I like the fact that there's plot that like I dug it. I dug learning about this setting. It's so interesting learning about this setting. I don't want to complain about a piece of metal in this. Yeah, I got spoilery things to both talk about, good and bad.
Okay. So all in all, I think
terrible game.
Yeah, terrible game. Okay, the questions we ask are, does this game hold up, and is this a good Infocom game? And I think this is the first time, one of the rare times, I'm going to say yes and yes, it holds up, and yes, this would be a good first Infocom game, especially if you play the version where you don't have to eat.
Thinking about that, is it a good game? 100%. Good Infocom game? Yes. Does it hold up? Yes. Is it a good first game? You know what? Yes. If somebody's already a good gamer, like, it's not like you're introducing a kid to it and they're going to struggle with the whole idea of a text adventure. Like, if you've played a text adventure before and this will be your first Infocom game, but you're already familiar with text adventures, then 100% dive in. This would be a great first one. It might unfortunately set the bar a little high compared to some other Infocom games. But other than that, definitely. I don't know that it's necessarily a good first text adventure.
Okay.
Like, you've never played either Infocom or any other text adventure. I think it would still be too complicated a map, too complicated an everything. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe if you're up for it and you say, I want to dig in for 6 months and learn text adventuring. But I think it wouldn't be a first text adventure. But if it's not your first text adventure, it would be an excellent first Infocom game.
Sure.
I'm going to say that.
Okay. I agree. I think one of the reasons, though, it makes it a great first Infocom game is that the puzzles are fair and
totally
accessible. Yep. There's no... You know, sometimes a puzzle... Just the only way to solve it is because, like, one little word gives you an inkling of a hint. You know, it's just like...
Well, there is a random element to this.
I don't like that. I'm going to type
cheesed
that.
Cheesed me off.
That, like, was not fair.
What is this?
Yeah, that's true. That could not be fair. I actually needed help on that one.
I had to look up help. Well, I ended up solving it and then subsequently looking up help going, like, am I wrong about this? Because I got a thing once and I didn't get it later. And what's going on? And then I just went back to a save in which I had a thing and just worked from there because I couldn't figure out why I got it. And it turns out it's random. I'm like, oh, that's not good.
Yeah. Yeah, because something can happen to make the random thing too late, and then you're kind of out of luck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't dig that. But the puzzles themselves... Mm-hmm. I do agree, like, for the most part, like, I'm trying to think, there's one object that gets described in an intentionally vague way that I was like, come on, man, I would have known what that was.
Sure.
But it is what it is, you know, early text adventures. But overall, yes, I think the puzzles are fair. There's one ending puzzle that took me forever to figure out. And I remember I was at my girlfriend's house and just sitting on the couch, and suddenly I was like, I've got an idea. And I was all excited. And then I had to explain to her the game and all of this just to get up to the very last thing and say, okay, I'm currently doing this. And I think if I do this and then this, and then I do this, I think I'm going to, I want to go home and play the game.
But, and now Carrington doesn't have a girlfriend anymore.
And then my ex and I were just, but no, I waited till the next day, but I had one of those iconic Infocom moments where you're stumped on a puzzle and rather than look up an answer or whatever, I just let it sit in my brain for a couple of days and percolate. And then suddenly out of nowhere, I had this flash that wasn't quite the right answer, but was close enough that I got to finish it. And it was so gratifying. So that was awesome.
Those are those.
Yeah, the best.
Those epiphanies are the best. And I don't, I can't think of when I last had one because I'm...
Because you're so good.
Because I'm so impatient now. You know, I'm just like, oh, I can't, you know, whatever. I'd look it up or get a little hint or something. But yeah, no, I'll get
stuck in a way like I did with Beyond Zork where I'm stuck and frustrated. Mm-hmm. And I don't even want a hint. I'm just like, just tell me the answer.
Right.
Whereas this, I was stuck, but really engaged and feeling like I can figure this out. Just give me some time.
Yeah.
And so this game was like that. So it is eminently fair in that way.
This was a great game, and I'm glad I played it. And
me too.
I'm not mad at Steve Moretzky.
This is good. Okay, so before we go into the spoiler fence, I guess we got to pick another game. We're going to pick the game for next time.
Right. It is your turn.
Very few.
Yes, your turn to pick.
Is it?
It is.
I thought I picked this.
No, I picked this.
Oh, cool.
It's your turn to pick the next one. I'm going to give you your choices. There are three to choose from of the purely text adventure games.
Okay.
You ready? Number one, the Lurking Horror. Number two, Wishbringer. Number three, Station Fall, the sequel to Planet Fall.
I don't really have a strong need, or rather strong opinion in a sense. I think I would be happy no matter what we do. I'm tempted to say The Lurking Horror because it's the game I've been most looking forward to. But at the same time, I always want to leave dessert to the last. But then I've built it up so much, I'm probably going to be disappointed. And so there's that. I'm keen on Wishbringer because it's another spell one, and the spell ones have always been good to us. Mm-hmm. Like, we play these magic games, and Infocom really does those well. Although I think Wishbringer is not in the world of Spellbreaker and such.
Right. And also, Wishbringer is I believe, an easy game. It's one of the more introductory beginning level games.
Okay, which means probably not one I want to necessarily save to last then. But then there's Station Fall, and one thing we've never done is play related games back to back. We've always said, okay, I've done that, now we wait for a bit.
Right.
So would you like to jump right into the sequel for this? And so we try that as a thing we've never done before. Or would you prefer to do not save like the baby game Wishbringer and do that? Do you have a preference?
I think... No, it's your choice, but I mean, I would not be averse to going right into the sequel.
Okay, then that's what I'm leaning towards, but I thought you'd say, no, I want to spread them out. So I think we should do Station Fall.
Okay, great.
Because it'll be like an experience we haven't had yet. We never did like Zork 2 into Zork 3. Can you imagine?
Oh, my gosh.
we would have never had another episode.
Right, yeah.
I guess because this was a really good one, it motivates me to play the sequel. Okay, so we should do Station Fall next.
Great. We will do Station Fall next.
Excellent.
Look forward to
it. I'm excited about that. So is Station Fall also by Steve Moretzky, or did somebody step in?
I believe so. I haven't done their research yet. I don't know, but I believe so.
Okay.
I'm pretty darn sure.
Yeah. I've seen the cover, and Mop Dude is back, except this time my memory is it's like the same guy in his outfit with his space helmet, but now there's like paperwork all around him.
Great.
So this one begins with, so my I have a vague memory, but it's that same kind of really fun cover. Because Planet Fall, great cover. Great yes. cover, Planet Fall. So I don't think Station Fall came in a, like one of the iconic, like the big shape boxes. I think it's only great. I think it's late enough. It's only a gray box type game, I think.
I believe so. Station Fall was also, yes, by Moretzky, and it came out in 1987. So that's going to be...
Oh my goodness, much later.
4 years after Planet Fall.
And also near the end of Infocom, essentially.
Right.
It's in the downslope of Infocom when they're, I guess, getting desperate for a hit. Let's go back to the big ones.
Right, go back to the...
I can see that. They say, hey, everyone loves Planet Fall. Yeah, so interesting. Okay, yeah. So we will do Station Fall next.
Excellent. Sounds good. Yeah. Why don't you give the spoiler fence spiel?
There's a spoiler fence. Be afraid of it. It's dangerous. Exactly. So we're about to now pass the spoiler balustrade, and on the other side of this, for the second part of the show, we will be basically ruining Planet Fall. We're going to talk about the ending. We're going to talk about in detail things that happen. Solutions to puzzles, who lives, who dies, who knew, who flew, Turk 182, we're doing the whole thing, and it will always be here. So if you haven't played Planetfall, you should, and mm-hmm. you should stop listening now, go play Planetfall, take as long as you want, and at any point you can come back here, the podcast will already be here.
We had someone write to us this week who said they stopped it on Zork 2 at the spoiler fence.
Yep.
And then they came back a year later and after they finished the game, and
And I think I text them, like, they're doing it right. That's exactly how I should keep this. Because, like, why spoil it for you? Like, maybe you'll want to play this game. And this one, you really should play it. But at some point, you will. And the podcast isn't going anywhere. So you can always come back and listen to the second half of this after you've played the game. And you won't have things ruined for you. And you can have the same experience I just had, which is so much more fun to play this game, knowing as little bit as possible. But if you've already played the game, or you are a monster and decide that you don't want to, that you can join us on the other half of the spoiler fence, and we will basically tell you all about the game. And now we are on the other side of the spoiler
fence. Yes, we are.
There's like this small pause as if music's going to play. Right. No, this is just us talking about there's no music things. So I want to talk about the magnet.
I want to talk about the fact that I picked a game about a virus that destroyed the planet.
I was trying to think, how do I bring that up in the first half without us going dark? But yes, this game is like, let's go to a planet in which basically everyone's died from a pandemic and they're all gone, and you have now caught this thing, and that's the ticking clock that's going to kill you in a couple of days because it's an uncurable pandemic and they didn't find a vaccine in time. Welcome to the setting. The irony was not lost on me while I was playing this game in spring of 2020.
Yeah, go play some computer games to relax and get away from the news.
But at least it was funny. But every time they would bring up another thing about the disease, however they would weirdly spell it, it'd be like, oh, now you've got it. And they never got a vaccine in time. And everyone was like, oh, okay, that's a fun setting. And yet still, I love a post-apocalyptic, desolate setting. And so why not have one that speaks to our times?
Sure.
So there was that. But I want to talk about you get a metal bar that is U-shaped. Now, it does say it's U-shaped. It says on an upper shelf is a metal bar curved into a U-shape. Somehow, I missed that letter U. And I just got, because I'm reading too quickly, I got the fact that it's a curved metal bar.
Right.
Curved metal bar, to me, means crowbar. So I'm thinking, mm-hmm. I've got a crowbar.
It doesn't say the size of it at all. And I was imagining large as well.
Exactly. So I'm thinking, okay, I've got a crowbar. It's going to open something up. And because I didn't read it, I got distracted by my assumptions. That was a big mistake here because it's a little tiny curved U, which is, of course, a magnet. But the thing is, my avatar is a future spaceman, dude. It's going to know that it's a magnet, especially if it's a traditional curved U-shaped magnet. It's probably going to have the little red ends and stuff. Like, oh, so this is a magnet that you have to use to pick up the randomly appearing key. Boo to that.
Randomly appearing?
The little thing that's in the ground doesn't always appear.
Really?
Yeah, you walk through a corridor. This is the random thing that was bugging me. You walk down a corridor.
I thought we were talking about a different random thing. You just look
there's
at
more
the,
random things?
It says there's a big crack, and then you just look at the crack, and then you
notice. No, it doesn't say there's a big crack. You can walk through the hallway, and it doesn't say there's a big crack at all.
Huh.
I walked through the hallway and maybe on like my third time traversing, it's over where you're going to use the ladder. So it's like the space south of where the ladder is. Yeah, so you're walking up to use the ladder. Uh-huh. And I'd done the ladder stuff, and walking back, it said you noticed a glint in the ground. So I'm like, glint in the ground. So I looked down the ground and it says, oh, there's a crevice, which I had never seen before. So then you look in the crevice and it says, oh, you can see there's a bit of metal there. Didn't know what to do about that because I didn't know I was holding a magnet. I thought I was holding a crowbar. So it took me forever. Maybe I'm also frustrated because I was still too stupid to know what a magnet is. But once you figure out finally that it's a magnet, you can hold the magnet down. It pulls up the key. So I've got that. I make a save and I go on to do something else not too long after this and I get stuck. So I restore from the save before my finding the magnet because I want to have fewer turns because you've got this disease. Right. And I'm really trying to limit my number of turns. So go back a couple of saves, walk down the corridor. There's no glint. There's no crevice. There's no anything. Because until it tells you it's there, you can't find it. And that was annoying. Hmm. So I'm like, but I know there's a key here. And then I started thinking, am I wrong? Is this not the room with the key? So I guess you just have to like hope you see it. And it's one out of every five or 10 times you walk through this corridor, it'll surprise you and say there's a bit of glinting metal.
Maybe I just got lucky with the randomizer. I thought it mentioned in the room that there was like a crack in the ground. And if you looked in the crack, you could see a piece of something shiny, and then it went from there. But
nope. And then subsequently, after finishing, because I did want to, I luckily got through, the only hint I needed was I asked you one time about poor Floyd. I'm like, mm-hmm. am I right about this? I'm mm-hmm. very disappointed if I am, and unfortunately I was. After I was done, because I was still upset about this key, I went and looked through a couple of walkthroughs, and they'll say, okay, go to this room, walk north, walk south, walk north, just keep doing that until it tells you you see a glint. That is
okay. That's not
crappy.
Good. The random thing
that is not good.
The other not good random thing, the one that bit me, was there's another key card that you need that Floyd has, and
sure, but he gave it to me after I did the other elevator. Does he not do that?
That's the other random thing. Sometimes if you use a card in front of him, he will notice it and say, "Oh, I have one of those too," and he pulls out of his pocket or whatever, his wherever he keeps things, a card, and he gives it to you, but that's random.
I didn't know that he did it at such an apropos time for me, because I was doing that thing where I had to go use the one elevator for me. Mm-hmm. There's the three times we have to go and get like the green liquid, get mm-hmm. the blue liquid, get whatever. And then after I was done the last of those and I came down in the elevator, Floyd said, "Oh, I've got one of those cards." And I assumed it was, now that I've solved the one puzzle, he'll give me the key to do the next puzzle. I guess I just got lucky.
Yeah, you got lucky.
I didn't even realize it was random.
Basically, there's three things you need Floyd to do for you in the game. One is to give you the card. One is to go into the robot hole.
Mm-hmm.
And get the other get a board, a computer board or something, and the other is the big thing that he has to do last, right? And
which we're both still not saying.
We're still not. Yeah, there will be a spoiler fence after the spoiler fence. And so if he doesn't do those first two things before he does the big third thing,
oh, then you can't. You couldn't win.
Right, you couldn't win. So the other way to get the card that he has. I mean, I knew he had it after I had to look at the Invisiclue said that he had it. So, like, I examined him. You know, normally it's if he's holding something, it will tell you, but it's hidden. So the way to get it is to shut him down, to search him, to take it, and then, because if you search him while he's awake, then he says it tickles or something like that. shut him down, you search him, you find the card, you take it. And then you turn him on, and he's mad at you for shutting. Why are you shutting
him down? And for shutting him down. Yeah. Sure, I wouldn't even think to shut him down and search him, though.
Right. So neither did I. But yeah, so that was the other random thing, is you've got to get the card from him. So that's kind of dumb.
I did not know that was random. I got lucky.
Yes, you did. Yeah, and then Floyd. Yeah, the other thing is he's got to go in into the robot hole and get the thing from you, which I also did that out of order until I figured it out. So
he dies. So he comes back later.
You must have been surprised that he died.
I was surprised and I was sad. I had written down, where are my notes? I know I wrote about this.
I really want to know how you felt about this, because I mean, this is the thing that you managed to get 30 or 40 years without learning about, and it's just like a miracle, and I really want to know.
I had no idea that Floyd died. I had no idea. I wonder if I kept the audio. Like when we talked at the end of last show, like after the show was over, we were just chatting, and you asked me, like, what do I know about this? And I'm like, I know there's a dude named Floyd, who I don't think is who you play. I think it's like an NPC in the game. I didn't even know it was a robot. It was just like a guy named Floyd. I think I vaguely thought Floyd was the one on the cover, and just like Spaceman Floyd. But I did not know that Floyd died. I knew that everybody loved Floyd, and when I'm playing the game, I'm like, yeah, Floyd is cute, and Floyd is the thing that's different than the setting. I can see how everyone really likes Floyd, and Floyd is helpful, but I really... I did not know that Floyd was going to die, but partway into the game, I started worrying Floyd would die because in my notes, I say foreshadowing, ? Floyd keeps talking about his friend Lazarus. Is that robot going to come back from the dead? Mm. And so I started thinking, because he keeps talking about Lazarus, maybe that puts this whole back from the dead thing in me. And then later in my notes, Floyd rescued himself, ! And I'm just taking notes. Like when I'm ending one day going on to the next day, so I remember where I am. It says I'm in BioLock looking into a dangerous room, and then it says Floyd stands on his tiptoes and peers in the window, looks dangerous there, blah blah blah. And this is when Floyd's telling me, when Floyd knocks open the door again, okay, go. Floyd's voice trembles slightly as he waits for you to open the door, and I'm like, not sure about this. And then my next note is, eek, Floyd's dead. And that's when I kept thinking, there's going to be a way to do this without Floyd dying. And I have to like arm Floyd, so we can go in there and or make Floyd faster. There's gonna be like a card I can swipe through. The whole swipe card through was bugging me, the wording. But I thought I'd get a card that I could swipe through with Floyd, or I could grease Floyd up so it'd be hard for the monsters to hold him, or I could arm him because I had a laser by this point. I'm like, can I give Floyd the laser and he can shoot his way through, or do I go in with Floyd and be shooting? I kept thinking maybe I'm supposed to open the door again and shoot into the room to like give cover fire for Floyd. Like, the 80s movies were all telling me to solve this in a different way, man. And finally I was thinking, like, I also figured I must, Floyd is kind of helpful, not hugely helpful, but sort of helpful. And I thought, if Floyd dies, I bet you I'm going to finish this game with only like 78 points or something. So then I started being a monster and thinking, well, I need Floyd to live because I'm not going to get the best score if Floyd dies, because I am clearly empty.
You actually get points when he dies. So,
so it's like, woohoo, kill Floyd. And then finally, that was really the only kind of hint I needed. I got to the point where I thought, I think there's no way to save Floyd. I think that's why everyone remembers Floyd, is because Floyd sacrifices himself for you. And so I think I sent you either an email or a tweet or something saying, okay, I don't want a big spoiler, but is it true that there's nothing I can do to like arm or defend Floyd so he survives this biochamber? And you're like, yep. It's like, oh, that is sad face
but
emoji.
The,
that's
but
what
the,
that is.
The death scene is just so manipulative. It's just like, oh, he's dying in your arms and you sing him a little song.
You sing him his favorite song? Yeah, as he finished the last verse, Floyd smiles with contentment and then his eyes close and his head rolls to one side. You sit in silence for a moment. In memory of a brave friend who gave his life so that you might live. I'm like, come on. Oh, poor Floyd.
Yeah. Yeah.
Though I have a problem with how Floyd comes back. Floyd comes back at the end, and I have a weird theory about it, isn't it?
Just like, oh, he's better. The end.
I think there's a chance the end doesn't mean what it says.
Really?
But of course, there's a sequel, so it must. But I think the only way to read the ending of this logically is, you die at the end.
What?
That it's in your head. The ending is like the movie Brazil. I have a theory. I want to talk to you later.
Okay.
I don't think the ending should be taken literally. You actually die at the end of this game.
Okay.
You do the full Floyd, full Monty of Floyd.
I don't think that's really the case,
but there's otherwise it's badly written. It's either a bad ending or it's a really good ending where you're dead at the end.
Okay, I'm really...
So of course, I also think that the person dies in the movie... there's a horror movie where I keep arguing that Candyman, where I think Candyman, the person, the hero of the movie, dies halfway through the film, and the rest is not really real. So I have weird theories about death in movies, apparently, in the end games.
Okay. All right, we'll talk about that later. I want to know what puzzle you figured out with at the girlfriend's and then had to...
Throwing the laser over the side, and I was super proud of it because I was telling her how, okay, I've shrunk myself. And imagine you're trying to come across as like a cool dude with your girlfriend and having explained to her, okay, I'm playing this
but
game.
You're caring.
But unfortunately, you're me. So I'm playing this game. So already it's like, oh, a gamer. But it's like a vintage old text adventure game. In it, I'm playing this like... dude who's really upset that his robot 5-year-old pal has just died, and I've shrunk myself down to microscopic size, and I'm on like a microchip, and I've fired my laser beam into the thing to get rid of the inclusion in a ruby, and then I turn around and there's this microbe and I've got to zap it with my laser beam, and I'm trying to figure out, like, there's no way to describe the situation in which you come across as anything but like an uber nerd who should
be single. But it's such a great game within a game. It's like completely changes the setting.
It's so good.
Microscopic level. I love it. I love it.
Yep. Completely love it too. It reminded, this game, so many other games, I think this must have influenced or whatever. I don't know if you ever played the game Wasteland for the Apple II. It's a big computer role-playing game, like one of those massive, take forever to play. And it's incredible. It is such a good game. The Fallout games are basically... they come from that. It's the same sort of setting. There was Wasteland first, and then there was Fallout and Fallout 2, and then the modern Fallouts. But they all kind of are derived from this game called Wasteland that was on Commodore 64 and Apple II, and like vintage CRPG. That's incredible. And it's a future game where you're zapping stuff, but there is a part where you get shrunk down. One of the characters of your party gets shrunk down and gets put inside a computer to kind of go battle it inside. And it's the same sort of idea where you're shrunk down to microscopic size, and now you got to battle the computer from within. And it's really cool. And it's this kind of thing. And it's really neat where you're going from the bigger maze world of this planet, and now you go down into the teeny tiny world and the microscopic with your laser gun. But I finally figured out, like, you could, the laser has that little dial to make it like more or less powerful. First time I used the laser on the Ruby, I just basically destroyed it and realized, oh right, yeah, should turn that down a little bit. I'm a hotshot, like make everything super zapper.
Right.
But then fighting the microbe, if you fire too hot, like your laser gun's not going to work. And if you fire too low, it doesn't kill the microbe. So I kept thinking, like, what's the solution here? Like, I can't use this. But then I realized it also does heat up. Like, if you keep it on a low setting, every time you fire the microbe, it'll go back a bit, but it also heats up your laser. And it was sitting on a couch. I realized, oh, I can just keep doing that because it's attracted to heat. And I'm basically on a bridge. So if I get it really super hot, I can chuck it over the side like flak from an airplane. So I'm trying to explain to her that I'm going to chuck my laser gun over the side like flak from an airplane. And she's just like looking at me like she's made some really bad choices in her life. And I realized, oh yeah, I'm just babbling at you like a big old super nerd. But I was so excited to solve that last puzzle. It's one of those really fulfilling moments where you have this epiphany. I can heat up my laser and chuck it over the bridge, which is essentially how you solve the last puzzle. And I was really, really happy about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was one of the parts I remembered from having played it before. And I'm pretty sure I had to cheat to get that before when I played it years ago. So
it took me like 3 days of thinking about it and trying stuff.
Yeah. And then he goes from straight there into kind of the denouement where you're in the very last little puzzle where it puts you in an impossible situation that you mm-hmm. can get yourself out of. And
you just run.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Run. There's a couple of really sad, gory deaths in this game. One is if you go through the radiation room, which is a great red herring. There's a room that's flooded in radiation.
Yes.
And you can get into it, and there's some interesting things there. There's like a library video spool, and there's like a light source, which you desperately need to get some other places. And but basically 3 or 4 moves after you've been in there, it says, like, you know, your hair starts to fall out. And then, like, I don't know.
You have made a bad
super
choice.
Gory. It's like your limbs start to fall off, and then you're dead. I mean, and there's no radiation suit. There's just really, you shouldn't go into that room.
Yes.
But it was kind of gory and funny gory. And the other one, did you try to sleep in the medical room?
No, I did try to sleep one place. It kept telling me I wasn't tired. Then I tried to sleep one place and it said I shouldn't sleep there. And I realized you should just sleep in the dormitory. There's literal rooms with beds.
Right.
So I just always slept in those.
I didn't copy and paste it. It's really good and it's worth checking out. Basically, I mean, I got tired when I was over in the other part of the map, not with the dorms, but there I was in the infirmary and there is a bed there. And if you lay down on it, then all of a sudden a robot comes from the shadows and the thing is kind of smoking and running into walls and it's a medical bot and it ties you down, straps you down to the table. It injects you with all 374 vials of medicine that it has all at once. And then the last thing you notice as you are starting to pass out is it's preparing to saw off your legs. The end.
Awesome. The end. Well, lovely.
It's real
good. Nope. I didn't get that death. That's awesome.
Yeah. But there's the dark room with no light source mm-hmm. other than the lamp that you cannot get to. And there's, yeah, a couple red herrings, which, I don't know, I feel two ways about. I kind of like them and kind of didn't, But
overall, totally fair though. Like I liked the puzzles and I liked the world and there's a good number of things to have to do. And I liked how they built onto each other. Like I'm going to have to get past this locked door, learning my little swipe thing so that I get my basically infinite food now mm-hmm. with my canteen I can fill up. And then having to find that other flask that I can fill up with various colors. But then you find the place with the the buttons telling you like what's run out and go, okay, go down and get the flask filled with whatever color and bring it back. And like, not difficult puzzles, but still puzzles where it's more about figuring out what you have to do than the difficulty of doing it, which is the, that's the sweet spot when it comes to these puzzles, I think.
Right.
So I dug that.
Yeah.
What didn't I like? Didn't like that magnet. Oh, I did not like that magnet.
I had trouble. I had parser problems with the magnet. Even when I, you know, knew what I was supposed to do, I don't remember exactly how you're supposed to do it, but maybe you're supposed to hold bar over key. That's the answer. But I put bar in crack, touch key with bar, and various, and it just kept not doing what I wanted. And he had to say it in exactly it the way that it, the 600 had to use the exact combination of the 699 words or whatever.
And you have to use all of them in the right order.
Right. I kept losing things, and this is just back to the inventory problems.
Oh, because you have to leave everything around.
You have to leave things around.
I would lump things by teleporters when I, so I'd know I could jump, I could teleport to them.
Yeah, you're
so
smart.
I use the teleportation rooms as my dumping places.
Right. I mean, you know, I, like,
if I was
lose
the wrong one, I could always just
lose the elevator card, or I accidentally dropped a thing and then, you know, I didn't pick it up again. Yeah, so I'm just carrying...
Well, the cards I would leave where they were needed.
Right.
Like, so I left, like, the kitchen card in the room with the kitchen door.
Sure.
So I'd know if I go there and I need the room, I can take the card, swipe it through the slot, whatever, and then drop the card again. And so it would always be where I want it because of the stupid limitation on how much I could hold.
Yeah. And there is a pocket in your suit, and you can keep the other cards in your pocket.
Oh. So... Or maybe I could have done that.
Now I tell you.
Now you tell me. Maybe I should have only got 79 out of 80 for this game then. Really? There's a... Oh, wow. In fact, I think I knew there was a pocket too because you find something in it. I didn't even think of that. Wow. Wowzers. Floyd and me actually made it through this, huh? So I loved the fact... Like, I love this setting. I love this setting so much. I love a desolate future, everything's destroyed setting. You know, like our current world. But the fact that they moved the planet... Like, so you're sitting in the library and I'm researching about this world that I'm on that was at one point like high technology and then got crappy again and then built back up. And that's such a neat idea. But then when I'm reading through like the planetary systems, planetaree, systums. So, and about how the primary planetary systems are course control for maintaining an ideal, climate, K-L-I-I-M-I-T. I'm looking at it, I'm like, what the heck is climate? And defense and stuff. And I'm like, okay, so planetary system for defense, I get that. For monitoring the project, and I'm like, what's the project? Like, that's interesting. But then also for course control, I'm like, how do you have course control for a planet? Oh, they moved their planet. I'm like, that is amazing. So they jumped their planet up to a different orbit so they can have a more ideal climate. I'm like, that is pretty high technology and it's really cool. But then in reading about this, it introduces this section for Z project. And I was like, ooh, the main menu section for the project. I can learn about what the project is and then the disease. And then you learn that you've got the disease. Mm-hmm. But just like learn kind of being in this place where you're feeling a little sick, but you're not really sure what. And I'm like, is it because I'm tired? Because you have to sleep. So it also made me think when it said I was feeling a bit off that it was just that I must either want to eat. So I try to eat, said, you're not hungry. I'm like, well, maybe I have to sleep or something. But it turns out it's this, you've got the disease and you just don't realize it yet. And then when I start reading through this project in which they put everybody into cryogenic sleep, I'm like, oh, just like Portal, cool. Mm-hmm. And then learning about the disease and then how it makes you, it basically gives you the symptoms that you're going to feel kind of weak. You have to say, I'm like, oh, those are the symptoms I have. And I was like, oh, goodness. And that's such a great reveal to be in the library and read about that and then realize your character has that. And I'm like, okay, how long have I been playing and how much time do I have left? That is a great moment in the plot.
Yeah, and you get to learn about the culture of the people that who aren't there and about the planet that you're on and, yeah, what happened to them and then eventually you realize that they are there. They're just in cryogenic stasis somewhere and I'm really curious to know about why you think the ending isn't the real ending.
Okay,
so in the end, first tell what the ending says it is and then
Yeah. Okay. So the end happens when you have solved the, like you've shrunk yourself down like a little gnat with a laser. You've zapped the faulty crystal thing or replaced it, whatever. You've killed the microbes. You get up big again, but then you realize you have to go through that room that basically killed Floyd, but you're going to come from the other direction. But you're able to slow everything down because that gas, whatever. So you're going to make a run through it. You have to. And so the end of this game is I make just like I bat out of hell. I run through the room with all the death monsters. I run past Floyd's poor broken body into the bio lock. You get to the other side of the bio lock and the monsters are right on your tail. So you open that door and they're right behind you. And you basically have to race to the elevator that goes down to the cryo unit because you've solved everything, but now you're fleeing these monsters. So you run like 3 squares north and 4 squares west into this elevator, and they're right on top of you. Like you're full sprint. You get to this elevator, you slap the button, doors close, and they almost got you, but they didn't get you. So you've made it. And your mind kind of staggers. You're like, oh my goodness. And now, of course, all this time you've been getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And you've just at the last minute finally solved everything. Doors open up, you step out and into the cryo units. So you've got thousands and thousands of it's an enormous chamber for thousands and thousands of frozen bodies, basically. And as you step in, they start to wake up. So first person wakes up, she steps out, she bows to you. She's this beautiful lady. Her name is Veldina. She's the leader of the planet, and she looks over the little readout things and realizes like what you've done, and you've come up with a cure for this. And she's like, oh my goodness, that's awesome. And she's grateful. And it's like the happy ending, because like there's people from the Stellar Patrol have like they find the planet and you get promoted but the main thing is like Floyd is back. So Floyd is happy and he sees you and it's like, yay, Floyd's not really dead. And he says, Floyd, feeling better now, smiling from ear to ear. Look what Floyd found. And he hands you a helicopter key, a reactor elevator card, and a paddleball set, of course. And I like that he says maybe we can use them in the sequel, although that's kind of that. This game plays a lot with the diegetic and the mimesis and stuff like that. And so I dig that. But my notes are, and then it says my score would be 80 out of 80 points. It's day 3 of your adventure. Current Galactic Standard Time adjusted to your local day cycle is 68-68. I thought it was neat. Just coincidence. This score gives you the rank of Galactic Overlord. So thinking about this, I think, okay, I literally just sprinted past the broken and mangled body of Floyd mm-hmm. 5 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. I went down a cryo elevator and whammo, everybody in the planet has instantly come alive, thanks to me. And the very first cryo sleeper gets awakened, and after just like glancing over some readouts, she bows to me and knows about everything I've done. And I receive a shot that immediately cures me of the disease. And the required locals already tell me they have already spotted, and previously spotted, a new Stellar Patrol ship that's in orbit. So I'm miraculously saved from this planet. And they've already contacted that ship. And it says, as if on cue, a landing party from that ship happens to materialize right beside me. And Blather, my nemesis, is part of that landing party, having been coincidentally picked up in the middle of deep space in another escape pod, instead of being blown up as he should have been, because he was standing right where the thing exploded. And he's not just in that landing party, he's now babbling cravenly. So my original nemesis gets his comeuppance right in front of me, and the grateful people of this planet then offer me leadership of their world. And even if I turn it down, I'm told that Blather will be assigned to be my personal toilet attendant. And even though I raced moments, like just minute before, sprinted directly over top of Floyd's dead body, he's shown up completely repaired, doing totally fine, and had time to, in meanwhile, go around the ship and find fun things to show me that I could use in the sequel.
You're making this sound improbable.
And I'm like, you know what? I died in that elevator. I totally am like in that elevator, passing out from this disease on my way down. None of this is actually happening. Like, come on. Even for an Infocom game, all of this happening in the space of like 15 seconds.
That's dark.
It's the movie Brazil. It's the same thing. You get a happy ending, but that's not really happening. You are main person is slowly dying in an elevator and the brain is losing oxygen and is just dreaming of his friend coming back and everything's playing and he's saved the day and everyone's alive and Blather got his comeuppance and I've been promoted. Like everything my character could hope for instantly comes true in a 5-second period. Like, nope, you're slipping into a coma, dude, and just enjoy it, but you're dead. So now there happens to be a sequel, but I strongly feel that you die at the end of this game.
Wow.
So that was my note. I was like, nope, I died.
I don't want to play with you anymore.
Sorry. Floyd is still dead. I am also dead. Everybody died. Welcome to the pandemic. This is why we have a spoiler fence, folks. See, some of you shouldn't go on the other side of it.
I shouldn't have come on the other side of it.
No, I should have a second spoiler fence where nobody joins me.
Harrington talks to himself.
So, I mean, the reality is I do think the game means for all that to be taken literally. Mm-hmm. I think...
This is typical for an Infocom game, right, where all of a sudden they stuff a big ending into a couple of paragraphs at the end, right, and that's it. You're done.
And I think, like, but that requires the intentional fallacy, where I say, this is how Infocom does it, this is what the author meant, blah, blah, blah. But if I just look at the text of the world, regardless of authorial intent, it's pretty clear my character is just dying from lack of oxygen and this disease is taking over my body.
Wow.
So this is what I think.
Holy cow. All right, so I didn't learn any words in this game, but I think I'm about to learn two words that you just used a little while ago that I wrote down. I tried to Google them while you're talking, and I didn't.
Floyd?
I'm spelling them wrong.
And no, disease.
Diet, genetic, and anesis?
Mimesis. And diegesis. Okay, so that's just fancy talk for the world of a thing and the narration of a thing. So diegesis would be the narrative of something, just because Floyd does this a lot. It's kind of like breaking the third wall. You know, like Floyd says, we can use this in the sequel.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's not really diegesis. It's more like, let's say you're watching a play and it opens. I'm going to tell you like a 2-second play. So curtain goes up. On the stage is a dude sitting in a cafe with a red hat on. Side of this stage will be a lady with a microphone and a spotlight goes on her. And she says, Bob, this is a story about Bob who used to wear a stupid hat. And then maybe Bob on stage looks at her like, why are you saying that to me, man? Like, and then she's acting as narrator. And Bob used to wear a stupid hat and goes to this cafe every day and gets nothing done. But on this day, things would be different. And then imagine the spotlight fades on her and it comes up more on Bob. And then Tyrannosaurus Rex bursts through the back wall and eats Bob. The end. So what we have here is like the world of Bob,
which is
like the story. That's the mimesis, like the show rather than tell, the actual action that's taking place, okay, the Tyrannosaurus Rex eating him, all that. But then you've got like the telling of the story, like the idea of narration. And so that's sometimes as obvious as an actual narrator talking to you, like this lady saying Bob has a silly hat and whatever. And then you have the breaking of those things, like when Bob looks at the narrator to say, why did you come into my hat or whatever. So like that's kind of crossing the line between the two. So it's the idea of like showing stuff.
Okay, so the mimesis really is the mimesis. Is the showing.
Like the way people say show don't tell, what they mean is more mimesis, less diegesis.
Okay, diegesis is narration, basically.
It's kind of like the telling of the story, but it's more than just, it doesn't have to be a narrator. Okay. It can also be like a comment on the thing.
It's a dark and stormy night, whatever.
I mean, yeah, exactly. So it's that, it's kind of like there's the world of the reader and then there's the world of the book, and the stuff that bridges the two is the diegesis. So sometimes that's a narrator, because the narrator is kind of aware of the reader, says, hey, look over there. And sometimes it's the description, dark and stormy night or whatever, versus the lightning crashed. And anyway, I was just throwing around fancy terms because that's how
today I learned.
Did you? Okay. I mean, really, it's better just to say the showing stuff and the telling stuff, because then people can understand what you say. Plus, my play was great. Tyrannosaurus Rex, Bob, Red Hat, there's a lot of meat there.
Most of it on Bob, who got eaten.
Poor Bob. Anyway, yeah, so the point I guess I was trying to make was that I liked that Floyd kind of breaks the fourth wall a bit, which is, forget the diegesis stuff. It's more, I like to say, like, maybe we can use this stuff in the sequel, or when you save and he says, ooh, are we going to do something dangerous?
Right.
Those things are really fun because it shows that the game, and more that Moretzky is aware that you're playing the game. So those moments where the game is aware that it's a game are always kind of fun in an Infocom thing, because they do that quite a bit. And I like how they do it.
Great.
And you die at the end of this game.
Me too. You don't.
No, you don't.
You get your every wish. You don't have to swab floors anymore. And it's everything's perfect, and they let make you the leader, and you get to play with your friend Floyd. You get to play some Hider and Seeker.
I was super. Oh, you get to play Hider and Seeker. And what's the other game he plays? Do you want to play
Hucka Bucka Beanstalk?
Hucka Bucka Beanstalk. So good. Oh, I was seriously sad. I mean, I wasn't crying, but I was sad that Floyd died. I was seriously trying to figure out how to save Floyd, to the point that I texted you to say, like, okay, is there a way to save Floyd? Like, I was disappointed with your answer.
I'm surprised that you felt that way, because, I mean, with the length of the text that happens when he dies, it was clear that I feel that this was a major plot point, and not.
But I didn't want it to happen.
Sure, no, yeah.
I like Floyd. Floyd is great. Floyd is a really fun part of this game. I can see why Floyd is famous. Mm-hmm. I have only fond memories of Floyd, and presumably then Floyd appears in the sequel.
I think so. I don't know. We'll find out.
I don't know anything about the sequel.
I know nothing about it. So
nice. I don't know anything about it either. Presumably you're playing the same character with Floyd again, but I guess we will find out. Or you play the person who discovers the dead body in the elevator. If it opens with an elevator and there's a dead person in it, I'll be like, ha, 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 ha. Do I have other notes? I think I don't have other notes. Scrolling. I think that's it.
Yeah, me too. This is a great game.
This is a great game.
Yeah. In some of the ways, like I said, in some ways, this is everything I look for in an Infocom game. And also, except for the bad parts that I didn't like, but they got a lot of things right. Ghost Eve.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yep. 100% agree. So I guess that's it. This was a good one. I'm glad we got to this.
Yeah.
So this has been Eaten by a Groove, the Infocom podcast. You can send us feedback if you want. Tell me about deaths in elevators. You can email us groove@monsterfeet.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter. That's a thing. He is at K Savitz. I am at Carrington. And if you want to help other people find the podcast, we would appreciate it. If you'd give us a nice review on iTunes, those are always pleasant. The show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for... not dying in an elevator and instead letting us use his song as a theme tune. Not that those are the only two options. But we do appreciate it. Next time we will play
Hucka Bucka Beanstalk.
We will play Hucka Bucka Beanstalk. You know the thing we never mentioned?
What?
Oh my gosh, I can't believe we never mentioned this.
What?
I was complaining about the beginning of this game. People, you only do eat and wait or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody made a text adventure in which those are your only two moves.
What?
Are eat and wait. Yep, we're going to have a link in the show notes.
Okay.
In fact, I've been waiting to play it just in case. I've been waiting to play it after this. So that's what I'm going to be doing tonight, is I'm going to be playing this game. We'll have a link in the show notes. I'll talk about it more next time.
Okay.
I'm very excited to play it too.
Is it a short little game?
It's a very short little game, and I said that all you can do is eat and wait. And I said you should call it Spring 2020. and so we named it Spring 2020, and it's a game in which the only commands you have are eat and wait.
Nice. Awesome. This is a brand new thing?
Brand new thing, just out.
Huh, neat. Yeah. Okay, let's play that. We'll have a little mini game we'll talk about.
Okay, let's do a mini game of Spring 2020, because okay. I'm excited to play Eat and Wait.
What's the... There's a text adventure... let me find it. I've played... It allows you to do one... Have you played the game Isle, A-I-S-L-E?
I have not.
It's a one-move text adventure with dozens or hundreds of different endings, and basically
what
you get one move and that's going to be it, and you do the move and then you play. I mean, you're meant to play the game over and over and over again, and you really get a story of everything
by piecing together
all the dozens of endings.
That sounds fascinating.
I will find it and I'll put a link to the show notes. It's also a fun one too. It's really it's worth checking out.
Well, I'm excited. I'm going to play all these games.
Okay, good. But yes, I will play the eat and wait game with you, and at least we'll mention it next time. Won't be its own episode, but unless it's great, in which we want to do that. But next game we will play officially will be Station Fall
by Steve Maresky. Is it by Steve Maresky?
It is. I checked.
Oh, excellent. Yes. So we're still not upset at Steve Maresky.
No.
But he has another chance. So good luck, Steve. Let's see what you got. And I will talk to you next time.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Carrington.
And you too, Kay.
have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
Nice. All right, I put a link to Isle, and it's you can just play it in the browser. You don't even have to install anything.
Oh, fantastic! That's convenient.
Yeah,
I like convenience.
Yeah, cool. Okay,
and I will play it while I'm. Can I play it in an elevator?
Probably.
As long as I play it quickly.
Try not to die.
So when you played the game, you were sure that you survived the end.
Yeah,
you took it at face value.
Yeah, I did. I did.
You gotta question everything, man.
Clearly.
You made me question, like, why you do this podcast with me.
mm-hmm.